Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom. I'm Dave. I'm here with the great Dane Lamont from Punisher Body Count. Dane, how are you?
Oh, doing great, and I'm glad to be on.
Mate, I just want to put a quick shout out. Obviously, I'm calling from Sydney, Australia. Whereabouts are you based? Is it Chicago or?
No, it's in central PA. The closest I can tell you is I'm about 2 hours east of a city called Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay. So, all right.
Yeah.
We've got some Pittsburgh listeners.
Yeah, or an 8-hour train ride to New York.
Which you do take, don't you, for some of your acting jobs?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Dane, I know that last time we were on The Signal, it was a very popular show, and you renamed Signal of Doom to Council of Doom, which kind of caught hold, I thought, you know, for a while there.
That's good. I'm glad my stupidity made it work.
Well, I always give taglines to my different guests. Like, we've got Drew Geraci, Drew's Views, Jimmy's Jargon. I think for you and I, when we come together, it is a council. You know what I'm saying? Like, basically, you know, two gods from intervening worlds meeting.
That works out. I like it.
I think so. Now, Dane, obviously you're a Punisher aficionado, Punisher Body Count. Is doing great guns, a podcast that I heavily recommend Signal of Doom listeners check out. Dane and Jake do a fantastic job. Now, firstly, we're going to open up and look into the Punisher Netflix show, Season 2, which is out now. And I do want to point to listeners that this is going to be spoiler-heavy, as all Signal of Doom reviews tend to be. We really struggle with the no-spoilers thing. We try so hard, and then we just ruin it. So... And then we're also going to look at Garth Ennis's The Slavers as well, which is a 6-issue arc from the Max series. And I thought those two things would be like a kind of mesh, Dane. I don't know what you're thinking.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah. Now, okay, so let's open it up, like, into Punisher Season 2. I've watched 8 episodes, Dane. Where are you up to?
Yeah, now that I've checked, I've also hit 8 episodes as well.
And it's a 13-episode series, I believe.
Yeah, 13.
Okay, 13. So, I don't know anything beyond what I've watched. I actually have stayed away from any sort of further reveals, so I can only talk about the 8. Do you know stuff that's going to happen in the 13, or have you stayed sort of spoiler-free?
I know what happens later on because I was in a scene, so that...
Well, yeah, well, you know, we're definitely going to get into that because...
No, I don't know how it ends. I don't know anything like that. And sure. The Facebook group connected to our podcast has been very respectful about that as well. Like, Jake and I kind of said, don't – like, because there's always going to be that guy that powers through it in, like, a day or 2 days.
Yeah.
And we just said, okay, keep it to yourself for the next week or two, basically.
Don't kick off with, like – and in the finale when Billy – you know what I mean? Like, just totally – you know, it's like in Secret Invasion, when you find out they're Skrulls, like, you know, the guy that has to, like, tell you the very last beat of the movie.
Yeah.
It's always so... When Frodo throws the ring, it's just like...
Yeah, Dave, in our... in the show Jake and I recorded last Friday, that's coming out in the next 2 days.
Awesome.
We literally get in this debate in Discharge Papers because he recommended me an anime to watch, and I, in his mind, I spoiled something because it was a boxing show, but it's in the future, so they use robotic arms, and I go, I think it's really dumb that the guy's so poor he can't afford robotic arms. That's not the point of the sport. That's like saying I'm going to play hockey without roller skates or ice skates or whatever. It's stupid.
Yeah.
And Jake says, well, thanks for spoiling it for me. And I go, his name's literally Gearless Joe. He doesn't have gear. I don't know what you were expecting from this, but, oh, man, he got so mad.
Well, I hate to be the judge between you two, but in my opinion, talking about the basic conceit of the show isn't a spoiler, if you know what I mean. That's central to the very concept of the show.
Yeah.
It's almost like Lord of the Rings. You know how Frodo's a hobbit? And it's like, spoiler! And it's like, not really.
Are you telling me there's going to be a war in the stars, in Star Wars?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of like, I think at some level, like you're allowed to say Punisher is Frank Castle. He's a vigilante. And that's okay. You know what I mean? Like, because 5 seconds into the show, that's known. But, you know, cutting to the very end is something different. It's a controversial and I kind of find almost interesting topic. Take, for example, okay, Jon Bernthal has been on Walking Dead, okay? Now, Walking Dead, it might not be as popular as it was as a TV show, but it definitely was a water cooler show for a number of years, at least, you know, here in, what, US and here in Australia, definitely. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, there was a moment in time where every episode, it felt like the fate of characters kind of hung on it, like, and you'd get to the end of the episode and you were sort of desperate to talk about it, but you had to check that, like, your colleague, you know, who you would speak about it with had seen the show. But there was this whole thing on Twitter about, like, I think it was, like, how long, you know, for a TV show like that, are you allowed to, you know, sort of spoilers? Like, what's your theory on that? Like, if you have people you're friends with and they're like, I haven't watched yet, well, you're like, well, it happened 3 weeks ago. You know, what is the in your mind, what is the sort of rules and regulations revolving around TV spoilers?
I think it's interesting. Yeah. I definitely understand the issues people have with that.
Mm.
It's just most of the time, at least on Facebook and stuff where people talk about these things, they at least say, hey, I'm really psyched for that Game of Thrones episode I just saw. Spoilers, guys.
Yeah.
Unless you're like in some tight-knit Facebook group with your friends or if you're texting each other after it, I don't think you have to worry too much. I mean, the other way. You obviously don't have to worry too much about that situation.
Hmm.
It's more about screaming into a group of strangers.
Yeah.
Or even with the coworker situation. I mean, literally every time I've been at a water cooler kind of situation, I go, hey, did you catch the latest episode of so-and-so? And if so, we could talk about it or whatever. But really, man, this, to me, that's such a comfortable situation for me to be in. I was talking about this with Jake in my last episode. My life, the conversations that take place in my life is nothing but a series of people going, hey, have you seen this show on Netflix? Hey, have you seen this show on Hulu? Whether it's a family gathering, a workplace thing, or going to the bar with some friends.
Mm-hmm.
It's me saying, no, but it sounds great. I'll have to check that out. And then I never check it out.
I hear you. There's a lot of content these days, and it's hard to – it's not like back in the old days. Like, I assume we're both old enough to remember when there was a lot less channels and a lot less shows. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of content now, and I agree. I at times, I'm like – like, I'm ashamed to say this. I love Better Call Saul. I've not watched Breaking Bad, and my girlfriend has, and I do mean to watch it. You know, but I feel – but it was just one of those things, like, I was very busy. I was writing a book at the time that she was watching it, so I didn't – she sort of binge-watched it. And I did come in and out of it because I do like Bryan Cranston. I did catch episodes here and there. But, you know, there are just shows you miss that you sort of would like to watch. Do you know what I'm saying? And you miss out on the conversation around it. But, you know, isn't life tough? Now, okay, so turning to this Punisher, give me your – because I've watched 8 and like – look, I'm not a hard sell on Frank Castle. Like, I generally love The Punisher, you know, to death. And, you know, it doesn't take much to impress me kind of thing. But I really dig this 88 episode so far. I want to say one thing. I want to get kind of your take. This feels like a more kind of chilled version of Frank Castle from last season. Like, he seems to have – I'm sure he has been violent – but overall, I find this is kind of a more chilled out version that Jon Bernthal's doing in season 2. And as a Punisher fan who likes Frank, I'm responding to that. Am I completely off base as I start with that observation?
No, I think it harkens back to more of what I like to call the urban adventurer kind of era of Punisher comics, where like after his appearance in Spider-Man and he starts getting his own series and such.
Mm-hmm.
He really just butts in on stuff.
Yeah. Mike Baron used to do that a lot, didn't he?
I can't – very much so. Yeah. He just gets in the middle of something, almost like an old Western where it's like, oh, some bad cowpokes are in town, but also I'm drinking here.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, you so I got to do something because who else is going to do it?
Mm. I always loved
that. That's the first three episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Episode three, I want to...
Before he turns into like a Terminator of killing or whatever, he really was just a guy, like even in the first episode, he's technically just a guy on vacation. Yeah. Like in the beginning, he's just having a nice little road trip.
And I mean, he has a moment with the woman there. I liked how that was done. I actually thought to myself, they're doing a softer take, which I mean, I'm responding to. I know there are some Punisher fans out there, and God bless them, who it's a war 100% of the time. You know what I mean? Like, it's like there's no off switch. Those kind of, you know, there are those fans out there who just want Frank 1000% dedicated to the war, but I responded to the fact that he was at least trying to have his version of normalcy, and when he swung that car around to go back to her, I liked that. Like, I thought that was an interesting storytelling choice, because in the previous season, that was an extremely raw Frank Castle, if you remember. Like, he was shouting, like, all the time to, like, Micro and stuff. Like, he was, you know, I hate to say about Frank, but he was close to deranged at points, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And what's hilarious is if you go back to even Daredevil season two, that man's just fully unhinged for the most part. He's screaming basically in every scene.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right there, David. Yeah.
No, it's interesting. Now, I really enjoyed the episode that, like, episode three. Basically, it's like Assault on Precinct, I think, 13 it's called. Have you ever seen that movie, John Carpenter? Very similar motif, like a Rio Bravo kind of situation. They're stuck in a cop station, a sheriff's place, and on all sides surrounded by those guys. I loved that. I mean, it's very obvious, like, you know, they're choosing to do that for an episode, but I really dug that. I thought it was a really cool way to ratchet up the tension and then you do see Frank going around, like, mercilessly killing. So it's not like he's not killing. But I have a question mark that I want to bring to your attention. Not having watched the whole season, who is the big bad guy? Like, that kind of, I mean, Amish or whatever the hell, you know, religion that guy's from. Is he related to a character in Punisher that I'm not aware of or that's not coming to mind?
You know, I kind of feel like he's a mashup. Well, first off, there is a character called the Preacher from the streets of Laredo.
Oh, yeah.
Arc. That was done in Marvel Knights, but that guy was kind of just more an ostentatious asshole. I don't think that's the guy they were basing the Preacher off of.
Sure.
I think they were basing it more off of Jason Aaron's wrap-up of Punisher Max, where early on, Kingpin hires a guy called the Mennonite to go after Frank, and that was a major hitman for the mob that eventually gave up the life and took up the Amish life. For people who don't know what the Amish are, they're a German Christian, well, they're Dutch mostly, but they're a Christian sect that has thrown away technology.
Yeah.
They don't deal with technology. They live the simple life out in the countryside. And, you know, they sell furniture and their wares. Literally, you will be stuck behind a horse and carriage on the road where I'm from in certain counties because
really?
Of how these people live. Oh, yeah, yeah, they still live like that. I mean, they have to put on little reflector guards so you don't destroy them at night.
Sure.
But, yeah, those guys definitely exist. And literally in the series, they don't call them the Mennonite, but they even say, like, you have criminal connections, so we're sending you to the bastard city of New York so you can at least – find Frank and the girl. And I go, oh, they're probably – because this series, especially season one, they liked their references to Punisher Max.
Yeah, and they certainly did.
Yeah. They liked it. It's very clear they want to do their own thing, but they at least throw you a couple bones every now and again with references to the series. Personally, if it's just a good show, I don't really care where the actual Cole Alves or not. But I appreciate the effort.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's all about the integrity of the show. Like, if the show's got to stand on its own 2 feet, and it does, with John Bernthal giving a super strong performance. But those Easter eggs are nice. I was just more of a, just as someone who's read a lot of Punisher, but not 100%, I was just wondering if there was a moment. I mean, isn't it kind of unfortunate for the Amish? They are Hollywood's favourite when it comes to this kind of thing. Like, it's just, they're forever tainted, like Witness or whatever it was that put them on the map with Hollywood, like, ever since. They, you know, they, like, that stereotype, it's like, oh, here we go again. For the millionth time. I'd almost hate, like, can you, you know, I don't know much about them, but I know that they're not into technology. Can you imagine if one of them, you gave one of them like a DVD collection of all their appearances in Hollywood and how much it would horrify them?
Like, well, here's the thing. The Amish are actually kind of assholes with some of that stuff, too, because they have a thing called Rumspringa, which means that you give a child, like when they turn 15 or 16, a time to spend apart from the tribe and be amongst technology and be amongst the rest of society. But mostly what they do is they use those kids to, like, bring in shit to their town. Like, whenever they couldn't. Or there's a lot of dumb stuff.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Because the whole thing about the Amish is they're supposed to be this simple, peaceful, like, literally nonviolent. They won't hit back if you...
Which is what Hollywood likes to always show about them as well. Like, the poor subjugated Amish, whenever they are sent out into the world, like, they're so clueless and... You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of the storyline every time kind of thing.
Yeah, but then you see someone who's probably not a teenager listening to the radio in their carriage, and you just go like, so is this a loophole God gave you to check the weather? I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm not religious.
I'm getting irrationally mad about the Amish.
Oh, you're on the signal of doom. You're allowed to be irrationally mad about anything you want. Like,
it's
open place to rant, basically. don't hold back. Yeah. Now,
it's just like you say in the movies, they're different in real life, but go ahead.
Oh, no, for sure. Now, basically, do you think that will be the big bad of the entire season, like the final? Because that guy is very, I mean, I know he's depicted as like a, you know, very loving to his wife and stuff, but when it comes to getting the job done, he's exceptionally ruthless. Like, this is something that I don't think, like, he's writing himself a pretty blank check to God, you know, if he's religious. Like, he's full on just killing indiscriminately. You know, not all the people he's attacking the sheriffs and stuff.
See, the thing is, it's not – well, plus, also, I know he's based off the Mennonite character from the comics because the Mennonite had a wife that was dying too.
Okay.
That was the other thing. It's like, hey, we can get you medicine for your wife. If you go kill Frey Castle, King Pay will pay for that shit, or at least a nice funeral. So it's very much – but here's the thing. Where they clearly wanted to use that, they liked the aesthetic, they liked the look of that guy, but they also didn't want to make it. Boy, they really just don't like dealing with the mafia in this series. I'll tell you that much.
Why not though? What is so great about? Like, I mean, I do like the old Russian gangster storyline myself, but why not the mafia? Because that is Frank's cup of tea normally.
Because I think what they want to do is I have a theory on this. They may not think the mafia is as culturally relevant or as scary as other things in America. Because remember, season one was all about that you can't trust the government. They're doing sketchy stuff.
Yeah.
And they are going to get you. Like, they will – Microchip had to separate himself from his family. He was constantly being hunted. Frank has to go fight the government and private military contractors. Scary. And like, for Americans that watch that, we understood that very much because a lot of our movies are about that. And also, what's funny is a lot of those movies will never say, hey, maybe the government or the military is an asshole. It's always like some branch, some diseased branch that needs burned off so the military can return to being as awesome as it always is. And the Punisher did that a little bit too, I guess. Now in season two, what I realized is they want to do the whole religious right thing. They want to get into all the fundamentalist Christians and how much. And what's funny is they even say, like, this is Christian Incorporated. It's a giant corporation, and it wants to take over America and install their gay son as the president. The Russian mobster brought all that up. You remember that, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I'm loving what you're saying, Dane, because then he said, oh, no, we don't want to get rid of him. We want to own him. Or, you know, and it's like they want to install someone in a position of power that they control. And, you know, that's essential. I mean, I like the themes that are being explored in Punisher, like paranoia of the government and the government overreach, and then obviously the religious right and just controlled politicians, all that kind of thing.
From a Russian organization.
Yes, like that too. Which is very befitting of the times right now where, I mean, even in Australia, we can't open the fucking paper or, you know, the internet news pages without references to Trump, Russian collusion, you know, blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on. Not to mention your government shutdown. I mean, that is a storyline that I think is ripe for Punisher stories, like, you know, the government shutdown. I don't know how that's affecting you over there at a personal level.
Yeah, it's been going on for over 30 days now.
Yeah, if that was happening in Australia, it would literally be – you wouldn't have a government by that point. Do you know what I mean? We wouldn't allow that to continue for 30 days without sort of getting rid of the whoever's running it kind of thing. It would be an election, forcing issue.
We've had government shutdown. We have a government shutdown once every 3 or 4 years. That's one thing that it just doesn't normally make the news that
often. Oh, I remember it happened with I know it's happened, man. I follow the news too. Like, I remember George Bush Sr., there was a government shutdown. I know it does. It's just a funny cultural difference between our countries that you guys can do that. I mean, it is going on for a long time. It is an interesting time over there politically as an observer. Yeah. Like, I think I was chatting to, you know, we've had Chuck Dix on the show a couple of times, and he was saying his Punisher, he would get stories straight out of the paper. You know what I mean? He will still wake up with stories looking in the paper thinking, I could insert Punisher into this. I think that right now in America, you're ripe for tales of Punisher. I almost wish, we can get into this later when we're doing the comic, I wish they would do that more in the comics. I think they could be a bit more ambitious. Probably hit on a few bigger notes. I think there's plenty of stories that Punisher would fit right into the zeitgeist now because there's so much paranoia around, you know, which is great for Punisher stories, basically.
I agree with you, David, but I feel like that would have to be tucked away at Punisher Max.
But I'm like, fine, tuck it away in Punisher Max. I don't care, you know?
I'm not even sure that imprint exists anymore unless Garth Ennis feels like doing a miniseries. Like, that's the only key that Marvel uses to open that door. That's kind of the problem. Like, with Punisher now, I really enjoy the Rosenberg run.
Yeah, I know you guys do.
But it is literally G.I. Joe versus Cobra stuff there. And if people don't like that, I get it. I'm a good time. But, man, like, I don't think Marvel wants to have anything to do with a superhero dealing with Trump or any of this stuff, unless it's done in a fairly indirect manner, similar to like the TV show where it's like it's not the Russian government that wants to put in this gay Christian man as president. It's the Russian mob. See, the smart most media these days just tries to be one or two steps separated from real life because here where a lot of people are sick of hearing about it. You just get saturated in it in America.
Oh, I'm sure you do. Like, yeah, of course. Like, I don't mind. I'm not up to the Rosenberg run like in full, but what I've read, I've enjoyed, and it really is in my it's on my iPad to read. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's a very good creator. And when you say G.I. Joe versus Cobra, I'm like, the teenage part of me is like, that's cool. I just feel that if they went on the Max imprint, which they easily could do, like they could easily run a Max imprint of Punisher. And do more hard-hitting storylines. And you don't have to – I'm not saying it just has to be Trump stories. I'm talking about the climate over there would be very suited to a more hard-hitting Punisher title on the stands. I'm surprised Marvel aren't doing it. Like, you don't have to name and shame exact companies. It is fictional. When I read The Slavers again, I was like, man, I forgot how much I enjoyed this version of Punisher. Like, I hadn't read any Max for a while, and I went back and read The Slavers, and I thought, you know, like, this is very good, and I'm sort of surprised there's not more of it now. Like, I think there's a market for it kind of thing. And generally, if there's a market for it, like, supply it, like, in terms of comics.
I definitely agree with you there. But also, to get back to a question you asked a little bit ago about the Preacher Man and what he's going to do. It actually made me think of it reminded me of something I thought up last night, which was, man, I wish they just gave Billy Russo a break this season and just not really include him.
Yeah.
Because I do find the whole Christian sect and the Russians that want the photo, that's much more compelling to me than people being sad about Billy.
Or the fucking Jigsaw and his little gang of misfits story. You know,
dude, what if we, yeah.
his little gang.
Yeah, what if we just do a freaking, what's it called, the heist?
Yeah, stick-up job. Kind of we could rob a bank. And I'm like, you're a fucking bunch of idiots. Yeah, like, we could rob a gumball machine.
Yeah, no one can stop us. We are upset soldiers, which, by the way, really bothers me because all those guys are from that support group.
Yeah.
Which means, what's his name, Curtis?
Yeah, Curtis has failed, basically, hugely.
Yeah, like, that's such a smack in the face to all the work that Curtis did when a scarred-up crazy man is like, dude, I got such a good offer for you.
Yeah. I agree with you there.
Trying to piece together your PTSD-ridden life, but, dude, let's rob and kill people.
I do think, and this is something that, as I've gotten older, that unfortunately, like, I don't mind the Jigsaw stuff. I've got a question, actually, about him and the therapist in a second, but I don't mind it, but it's nowhere near as compelling as the greater storyline that I feel is there with the girl into her story and with this preacher guy. That the stories interest me so much, but it feels like Frank Castle, like, okay, I'll put my bags down, I'll help you out on Jigsaw before I get to the really interesting stuff. Okay, I'll do it, you know. You almost feel Frank sort of sighing, like, Russo again, really?
Also, that man murdered Frank's family, and even Frank is apathetic about the whole thing.
Yeah, Frank's kind of like, I just Billy wish I'd put a bullet in him, yeah.
Yeah, sure, man. Billy Russo gave, like, the ultimate betrayal to Frank. I'm not saying he, like, pulled the trigger on his family or anything, but he clearly knew what was up, and he still let it happen. And kind of helped with that stuff. And even, but so that's what also gets me is that the whole emotions behind it always feel a little bit tilted because Frank's whole thing should, he's still alive. Cool. I will spend a whole afternoon hunting him down.
Sorry, Dave, talking over you for a second there. Very side story in a video game. The Russo storyline in this season, it's very much like optional mission. Okay, I'll do it. You know?
Yeah.
This leads into a question, though, because I don't mind the actor, and I do enjoy the stuff with the therapist. Now, let's dig into this a little bit, because here's another lady that I'm just sort of like, okay, you know, we live in a very sort of politically charged time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's the Me Too movement and this and that. How will it play, do you think, to sort of the wide audience that Russo kind of ends up having the sexual relationship with her after she stabs him with, I believe, a penknife, and then they start having sex. Do you think that that's in any way kind of, you know, controversial in sort of the wider sphere? Like, will there be Twitter sort of like fucking hashtags about this kind of things, what I'm trying to sort of say? You know how a lot of things become controversial? I sort of thought to myself, I don't know if that was necessary, to be honest. I just thought to myself, I'm not sure if that's the direction I would have taken this storyline in.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that to me because my little sister was texting me about 2 nights ago.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, what episode are you in, man? I go, I don't think you'll be able to see me. Don't watch The Punisher on my account, because she's like a very liberally minded librarian, and she's very good, very smart at her job. And I didn't think The Punisher would be up her alley, but she said, no, I love all these Marvel shows on Netflix, including The Punisher. I've already watched two or three episodes, and I was like, hey, that's great. And then I wrote her back and I said, just so you know, the psychologist is probably going to make you mad. she has mental issues, but she's also a really dumb character. And then the next day she texts me back, I'm like, yeah, I'm mad. Like this.
Yeah, I thought the story served her poorly from what I've seen. I thought she was interesting in a sense. I think it was interesting to have someone sitting down with Russo without the lack of judgment, really doing a full psychology lesson with him. I didn't feel it was appropriate that she just sort of like let him live in the apartment. And I thought it was kind of even less appropriate slash unrealistic that suddenly they start having this weird sexual thing and it ties into sort of she's into a bit of pain. I was kind of like, okay, I don't know if this was the best use of this episode's time. That's kind of where I am. And I'm no prude. You know what I mean? Like you're not talking to someone who's like, oh, ban the internet. It was more like, I just thought, I could see this playing poorly to a mainstream audience. I imagine on Twitter there's some people getting real mad right now kind of thing.
I guess, but narratively, like, it's one of those ideas that sounds good on paper. Like, yeah. Billy's all scarred up, and I'm scarred up too. So we're both damaged, and we'll suffer together, and it's super romantic and sexually charged. Sure. But then when it gets translated to television, something gets lost in translation, and this woman just becomes a vessel so Billy can escape the mental ward, the hospital, and then just give Billy a place to chill out and have deep dialogues about redemption, which really there's no like that's
yeah
there's they talk about certain things and then they just don't get reflected on the show. And I enjoy season two a lot, but they say like, Billy, it's not too late to be redeemed. And then Billy's like, I don't know if I deserve redemption. Then an episode later, rob banks and become like a feared military outfit, paramilitary organization in the middle of New York. Yeah, that's great, dude. Also, Frank Castle's my brother, and I have mental and I have memory loss. That oh so convenient plot device.
Yeah.
To create some kind of tragedy. I thought, where are they going with the memory loss stuff? It's only to make him really mad at Frank for Frank shooting at him and not knowing why, because he only has a memory of Frank in the military, not. You killed my family, and I'm going to bash your face in this mirror. That's all conveniently gone, so you can have kind of a character struggle. And it's the price of admission is way too cheap, and it's a cheap show when they do that kind of stuff.
I very much agree. Like, it's interesting, like, that you say that, because as I'm watching it, I'm kind of enjoying it, but I'm also thinking this feels very minor storyline in a better show. Than that. I mean, the interesting thing will be, I think, that after we've watched up to episode 8, each of us, which brings us to the robbing of basically, what was it, a savings, like payday kind of scenario, this kind of very low rent sort of, is it called payday over there in the States? Like sort of like payday loans?
Payday loans, check cashing, overnight kind of stuff. Yeah.
How funny was it when he got the fragmentation grenade and she's like, that ain't going to fit.
I thought that was hilarious.
I thought it was too,
like,
yeah.
Was like, do you think this is the first time a man has threatened to throw a frag grenade at me? Like, what life have you had, lady?
She's like, he can just go home. Like, I was just laughing at that. And then he points the gun at her and it's almost like, oh, is this bulletproof? Someone else lets him in.
Yeah.
I thought that was actually found that quite amusing.
No, I've lived in those neighborhoods like that, especially when I was just starting out as a teaching assistant somewhere.
Sure.
And people are behind bulletproof glass in shitty neighborhoods, and that's the one place where they have real power. Yeah. Like, I'll give you your lottery ticket when I'm good and ready. Yeah, shoot me, motherfucker. See what happens. Like, that is real, like, laid-back energy that they got. They don't care.
No, exactly. It's almost like, I agree with you, we've got them here too, and like it's the same sort of thing. Like, you do feel like there's a shotgun under the desk kind of thing, and over there probably is as well, I would imagine. Like, you know, also, I want to do a callback. I watched the first episode of the season with my girlfriend, and how about Shooter Jennings all through the first episode? Like, my girlfriend goes, is he playing the full album? Like, in the bar? Did you notice?
Yeah, that was pretty great.
It was awesome.
Yeah, I was watching the first episode with my father, and he got real excited for that.
Well, I looked at him and I go, I think that's Shooter Jennings. And then they cut to the sort of marquee sign at the front, which said it. But what I enjoyed was that, like, before all the shit went down, Shooter got to play about four or five songs. And it was like a bit of a listening appreciation party for Shooter Jennings before shit went wild.
Yeah, I was like, I thought maybe the director of that episode didn't realize he could cut footage. He didn't need to show it all.
Yeah, I know. Like, Frank's having a beer going, yeah, this is pretty good music. I'm pretty chilled. Like, it did, I feel, go on for too long, but I enjoyed it as a Shooter Jennings kind of, like, you know, not fan, but someone who appreciates his music. I thought it was, like, a nice advertisement, you know, for him.
That chill atmosphere was so so the opposite of what the Punisher normally is,
yeah,
that I couldn't take my eyes off of it. I was like, man, I wonder what they'll play next. Maybe they'll go to the jukebox. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. And then he got off stage before all the shooting started, so he's still alive in the Marvel Universe. That's good to know, Shooter.
Yeah. I was hoping they, like, just blew Shooter away.
Yeah.
Like with an SMG or something. Like, that was one of the requirements Shooter had.
Give him your hero's death.
I would just love if a celebrity just comes on the Punisher just to be killed violently in some way. I always find that kind of stuff funny.
Oh, yeah,
when
some
special guest comes on.
For
like
sure.
In the, what's it called? The, oh, that spy thriller show where everyone wears, they had two movies come out. Mm. Samuel L. Jackson was in the first one. The something, the men, the gold, god damn it. They had Elton John in the second movie. And
The Kingsman. The Kingsman?
Kingsman, yeah. They had Elton John the whole way through. And I thought they were just going to kill him because I thought that would be very funny.
Because
that's a universe that just doesn't have Elton John anymore.
Elton in his tracksuit, wasn't he, from memory? Wasn't he in one of his tracksuits, I think?
Yeah, that's the source of his power. So it wasn't happening.
Giving it overall marks, the eight we've watched so far, I want to factor in on things that I think are really working for this show. John Bernthal, he's a 10 out of 10 in my books. I liked him from Walking Dead, Wolf of Wall Street. I think he was criminally underrated in Wolf of Wall Street. I think he deserved a nomination there, an Oscar nomination for a supporting actor. I thought he was so good. Punisher Season 1, Daredevil Season 2, now into this. This guy is a powerhouse when it comes to a certain style of acting that I'm responding to. I can't think of a more perfect modern pick for Punisher than John Bernthal. For me, he carries the show on his back. I think also the girl is good. I hope we've only got like five episodes to go. I hope we really explore her story because I'm interested in that. I'm not as a huge a fan of the preacher guy as I'm sure some people are. I find his performance a bit sort of one note and limited. I do like Madonna. They're kind of the basic planks of the show for me. Where are you on it, Dave?
Yeah, I was even telling my little sister that when I was texting her back and forth, telling her about the show, I said I didn't like Amy originally, but she grows on you as a character. And one thing I like about John Byrne that he really adds to the Punisher is that he can flip into a certain level of charisma that you don't think the Punisher needs until you actually see it. Like, he actually has a charming, personality-filled side to him that helps him out in a lot of situations. That's just as helpful as a knife or a gun.
Yeah.
Like, he does that with the bartender lady, but he also sees – what I like about him is that this is a Punisher that can actually read a situation – and go like, oh, well, here I just need to be kind of a nicer guy and just try and talk to this doorman.
Yeah, he's got a warmth to him, doesn't he?
What information I can get out of this lady. Yeah, and I haven't really seen that in any other Punisher depiction, whether through the movies or through any TV or cartoon shows or what have you. Meanwhile, like in the actual comics from Mike Barron and Chuck Dixon's run, there are times where he has to infiltrate things and actually get along with people and – that and build up some surveillance. And I thought that was really smart for them to include this and for John Bernthal to do so well at that. So he isn't just either going between incredible grief or because if it was nothing but that, it would turn it into a cartoon.
Sorry, so you cut out at the very end there. Are you saying incredible grief or
incredibly loud anger?
Yes.
Like the thing is that he actually does have a more thought out, more charismatic middle road that he can go down to actually get what he wants. He did that a lot with Mike. He literally talked himself into Microchip's family in season one. He literally became the new dad with his freaking.
You're very true. Very true.
Personality.
I think you're 1,000% true. Yeah. Look, this season he uses it more. I think we mentioned at the start of this show. Jon Bernthal, I think, has a natural warmth to him as an actor. He generates a presence. When he does anger, he does anger like 200%. But you're right. The callback to season one, Dane, he did become basically a member of Michael Tripp's family. And at one point, I thought was going to fuck the wife. I'll be honest. I actually said to my girlfriend, I said, I think he may actually fuck her. Like, he's really getting ensconced here. It's in this one, it feels more natural. It feels like Jon Bernthal, the show gives him time to work on those kind of angles where I don't feel the movies did. I often feel a movie of The Punisher, it doesn't give enough time for the character. You get what we got in the movies. You get haunted, angry. That's all you get kind of thing. This season, Frank is, I think, downright affable at times. You know, like if Punisher fans go back to Mike Barron's run, Punisher is quite often, when he's chatting to Microchip and stuff, he's a little bit jokey, he's quite sort of chilled. Then he goes through periods of extreme paranoia, extreme anger. He has all those mood swings, but there is a version of Punisher where I think this show reflects. Now, I wonder if that was a directive from above. I'd almost love to know that, because whatever has happened, I think it works. There's actually also, people...
what do you mean a directive concerning what?
Like to make Punisher more stable / good-mannered. I wonder if that's like a directive coming from above when they did season two. Like take away some of his anger. I think he's in general very much a less angry character in season two. I'm just wondering if that was a directive from above, like from, you know, the showrunners.
I don't think it necessarily came. Well, maybe from the showrunners itself. I thought you meant something like Netflix.
Yeah, well, like Marvel or, you know, whoever. Like whoever is above the showrunners, you know what I mean? Like paying the bills. I wonder if, because there are a lot of female fans of Punisher, and I wonder if some of them are like, why don't we let Bernthal explore the character a bit more? You know, or if that's just a writing decision.
He is actually, I do agree, he is very popular with women, but I think one of the main, I don't know if you want to call it concerns or whatever, is that they didn't want to turn the, because I see this all the time in articles, about concerns about Frank being a hero to psychopaths or maybe, I want to shoot up my school because the Punisher made it cool. They're terrified of that kind of message.
And rightfully so. I mean, you know, like, but the nightmare is that, like, let's be real for a sec, Dane. The nightmare is someone walks into a school in a Punisher uniform and kills 40 people. And considering how often that happens in the States in terms of school shootings and, like, shootings in malls and stuff, the odds are of that happening, you know, reasonably high. Unfortunately, it's not really a reflection on the Punisher. It's a reflection on the culture, like, and how often these shootings just happen. They happen so often in the States that I imagine it must be quite scary. I mean, you have people who've been in two shooting incidences, you know? I mean, what do you think? There's a part of me that, like, I'm just saying, like, that is the nightmare. And maybe that did tie into toning the character down a little bit. I want to go on the record here. I think it's actually worked in this season. Like, I've always liked Frank having sort of, like, beneath his anger, I grew up on Mike Barron's comics, and I always liked the Punisher, like as a character. Like I liked him, I viewed him as like a sort of friend when I was a kid. And when he got a bit more unhinged, I was kind of like, okay, Frank, we're kind of off our meds now. So I do like they've dialed him down a little bit. That's just a personal choice. I can imagine some Punisher fans disagree.
You can't have a 13-episode season with a man eating baked beans in a warehouse alone that only goes out at night to kill Italians.
But you know what? There'd be some Punisher fans who would want that. I guarantee it.
And you know what? The way they could make that work, and I've argued this, is to make the season an anthology, like a collection of 3-episode arcs done by different directors that want to do different things with the Punisher.
Sure.
Like you know, like a collection of short horror movies, like VHS series or what have you. That could work for the Punisher. But unfortunately, the Netflix method is we have this main cast of characters, you have this many places to shoot. You're going to have to reuse the scenery a fair bit to keep the budget going.
Yeah.
So the Punisher has to be able to have a cast of characters. I was surprised, pleasantly surprised, when they brought back I'm sorry if I'm getting his name wrong. I think it's Curtis, the guy that's counseling all the other
– the Black Counselor. Guys. I think it is Curtis. Yeah, I like him a lot. He's good.
Yeah, but he's Frank's friend, and they're having a beer, and they're watching each other's backs. Now, given Frank's military past, that's not unheard of. Even in the comics, Frank does things for old military pals and such. But this is a friend that's been around for two seasons. That's pretty crazy.
Well, yeah, I mean, because they had to take, for whatever reason, they took Microchip off the board. And in the comics, traditionally, we know not since, like, the early 2000s, sadly, but Microchip was that buddy. You know what I mean? But he did have other, like, it was reasonably common, I believe, in the 80s and 90s to have kind of veteran stories where Frank would bump into veterans that he served with in Vietnam. Yeah, it was a fairly common storytelling crutch. I do want to go on record for one thing. I love what you're saying about that anthology, because there is a part of me, frankly, Dane, that if Frank was holed up in a warehouse just taking down incessant, like, gang activity and Russian mob mafia, call it what you will, child sex trafficking rings, I mean, I'd be down for that, but that's just a super bleak version of Punisher that I always wish they would do an episode or two of, but you are right. That is a possible show, but I feel the Netflix model... Netflix likes to do this thing with the subplots that is, I find, very obvious in all their shows. They have the overarching subplot, and then they have the let's do the side subplot episode. Like, it's very kind of almost telegraphed in a way. They let's wrap up one storyline before we get to the next one. Like, it's very sort of like... They have this weird time-out approach to storytelling in the Marvel Netflix shows where they're like, okay, we're going to pause on storyline A, we'll do storyline B this episode, but don't worry, we'll get back to A next episode. And you're sort of like, okay, I feel like they're holding my hand a little bit with the storytelling at times.
Not just that, but Marvel Netflix shows have a serious problem where halfway through, they just have a collection of episodes I call Let's Move the Furniture.
Yeah.
Where, okay, Billy has to get from here to here to here. Frank needs to get this kind of information. And it's just turning into like this cloak and dagger positioning of characters where no one's sitting on the furniture yet. Nothing's being used, but you get to see the chair get moved to where someone might use that chair to read a book on maybe two or three episodes from now. And what I mean by that... That is, maybe in the next two episodes, Frank will actually be in a position to make eye contact with Billy Russo and get into a firefight with him. And boy, that would be awesome. But you got to see Madani feel bad about something for 15 minutes first. You got to.
How about who was the guy's name? The meth head. I don't know what his name is, but
Turk, the black guy?
No, not him. No, not that guy. Okay. The white guy with the army camo jacket. The one who...
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so basically, spoilers, kids. Basically,
he's coke, I believe.
Oh, I thought they said you can't trust a meth head, and Curtis mentioned that like he likes meth. Anyway, so he when they're all getting ready for their sort of...
Oh, okay, no, maybe I was wrong there.
That's okay. When he goes out for the... before they rob that place, he sort of goes out looking for drugs. And what I love though is the scene when Madani is there in the back, and Frank and Curtis are kind of, or Frank's torturing him, and he sees Madani. He's like, "Hey, I remember you." I'm like, Madani was the only female at the veterans meeting, the last meeting. Yeah. Like, how could you not remember her? Like, he's like, "Hey, I remember you," and it's like from what, yesterday?
In order for him to remember her, they had to have a scene where she sat down in a meeting that day where he was there, and it just lined up so perfectly.
I laughed because I'd only just watched the previous episode, and I'm like, it can't have been more than a day. And she was the only one there at the meeting. And even then you were like, who's this tourist? And like bitched out on her. And I was sort of like, oh yeah, I had to roll my eyes at that moment because it was just, it actually made me laugh when he said it. Maybe it's the myth that's really cooked his brain.
It's to remind the audience. Remember that these two people met?
Yeah.
The episode that you watched like an hour ago?
Yeah,
This is relevant to the plot. Now Frank is going to punch him a couple times to get
but
information.
He also did it after. She'd been in the room for like the scene had been going for like a minute or two. So it wasn't like instantly. Like he was like racking his brain. Like, where do I know her from? Somewhere. Just in wrapping up so far of Punisher, like the sad thing is, Dane, do you feel that there's any possibility that we'll get a season 3 either on Disney Plus, you know, or is this going to be it? Which is going to be really sad because I think this is a really good show with a great actor playing Punisher. Is there any possibility in your mind that we'll see more?
Not only do I think it's not showing up, it's just, man, there's not the showrunner for Jessica Jones has already left months in advance before season. I think the show's just doomed, and I don't think it's going to show up on Disney.
No.
Not that I think Disney's not going to get their hands dirty with the Punisher, but simply they want to invest in their own more movie-centric properties. They don't necessarily care about the Punisher right now.
Okay. Because Bernthal, I don't feel, will hang around.
With that. No. I think they'll come back in 5 minutes.
Okay.
In 5 years, I mean. They'll come back to it and do something with it in 5 years, let people forget that this stuff is on Netflix or what have you. But, no, it's turned into like some weird turf war between content providers. And it's really sad. I felt like they were actually building up to something really cool with Luke Cage, where they were actually going to do a major gang wars in Harlem that would clearly spread to the rest of Manhattan.
Mm. It is sad because I think
the other characters involved.
I mean, I'm not a fan of every Netflix Marvel show. Like, I found Iron Fist just incredibly dull. I found Jessica Jones season 2 after a really good season 1. I found season 2, you know, far less enjoyable. But overall, Daredevil and Punisher for me have been linchpins. And I am, as a Punisher fan, am genuinely saddened that Jon Bernthal, he's not going to hang around. Like, his career's going places. You know what I mean? Like, and I feel like we're going to lose one of the finest actors working who happens to be a great Punisher. You know, he's a great fan of Punisher and a great supporter of it. Like, this is one thing I think this guy deserves so much credit for. Like, the shots with him, with veterans, with in comic book stores, like, I feel this is a guy who's given 150% to the character. Like, and who's just also incredibly talented. He's young. You know, like, it's such a shame to me that we're not going to see any more seasons with him. And I think you're right. Disney will look at the property down the road, of course, but it will be with a new Punisher. And you know what I mean? I just had that sadness because this is just corporate sort of, you know, machinations behind the scenes that, you know, viewers don't really get a chance to have any input on. Like, Disney will do what they'll do. And clearly there was a breaking down. Like, I mean, they're launching a rival streaming service. It's not really in their best interest to help promote Netflix. You know, they're out to compete and beat, basically. You know, and they're launching that service, I believe, in 2019. So it's going to be sometime this year.
Yeah, and they got a lot of properties. They want to have some kind of Star Wars show on it. They
Mandalorian?
Want to have some kind of Marvel show. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I'm not sure if Mandalorian's going to be on that, but any major property that they have.
Oh, no, I believe Mandalorian's been announced been announced to be on the streaming service, the Disney Plus streaming service. Mandalorian's definitely on that.
Oh, okay. I mean, I heard they were making it. I just didn't know where they're putting it. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Well, you need to listen to Signal of Doom more often, Dane, because we cover these topics in exhaustive detail. That's the only reason I know about it.
That's awesome. That's awesome, because most of my podcasts are listening to the Fall of Rome and stuff, and I need to listen just to more. I need to get back in the year of our Lord, 2019.
Well, if you're
what's going on,
if you're looking for a sarcastic take on pop culture, Stu and I can provide it. You know what I'm saying? And we will cover at times the Fall of Rome. I do bring up the Fall of Rome sometimes in my commentary.
That's great. That is good.
Okay, so I want to delve now into something that I think is highly relevant and on the minds of most Punisher fans. Take us through what episode you're an extra in, and give me the full details, Dane. I need the details.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I actually found out what episode I'm in today.
Okay.
It's actually because I didn't know.
Sure.
It's actually episode, I believe, 12, called Collision Course. And I am so hilariously blocked in my shot. It was actually pretty funny. Like, both me and my partner knew at the time that we were not going to be on the TV show. Because here's how it works. So I was up in Albany, and they actually – I've been working with the production company that deals with extras for a while. Mm-hmm. So now I get to wear a costume. I got to be a reporter.
Cool.
And here's what's really cool. And you can actually see this in the show on episode 12. In episode 12, there's going to be an ambulance that flips over and catches on fire. I won't say why or who is in it or anything like that, but sure. It's pretty cool.
Okay.
And obviously, when an ambulance flips over and catches on fire in a small town, that at least that's how they put it in the show, I believe, because it's outside of New York when it happens, New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Reporters show up to the scene.
Yep.
I'm representing the same news channel that was on Iron Man 3. Like, I'm wearing a similar outfit. My van is the van from Iron Man. They just
the one where they ask Tony Stark, and he then gives the he takes the microphone and gives him the address. Is that the scene?
Yeah. Like they just recycled it.
Love
and
it.
These guys were going just like, oh yeah, you see, it shows that it's in the same universe as the movie. It's really great. And I go, wow, yeah, this is.
Like, this is next level.
You could make this $1,000 nerd Jeopardy question. I don't think anyone would have been able to answer it. But so they put me up, and they put me up with this really handsome black dude that literally was like a model, and he was my cameraman. And I go, I feel like our role should be switched here. Now, his camera's fake, obviously, but it's real enough for the TV show. And him and I are just like really getting along and talking about like, oh, how do we get in this scene or whatever? Because essentially the camera is on tracks because they want to get a shot of all the reporters that are behind the yellow line that want to get questions on the ambulance. And the recurring detective that you've seen in season two is there, and he's investigating. He's talking with Madani.
Right.
While the rest of the cops are getting the reporters out of the way. One of the production assistants looks at me and my cameraman and he goes like, you know what, let's put you under the bridge that the ambulance fell off in, because that's something you'd investigate. So I am literally under heavy shadows, under a bridge, behind the flaming ambulance.
Right.
So you literally need x-ray vision to see me. And they still said, like, no, you still need to look concerned and talk into a fake camera and fake interview firemen that are on the scene. And
right.
I think they actually did use real firemen. So
okay.
I literally had to feign interest in a fake accident with firemen. It was, like, one of the most pointless jobs I think I've ever done in my life. But it was so hilarious. Like, I have to be real concerned about this while I'm certain I'm not going to get in. And for me, it's just a cool experience, and I got to do it.
Sure.
But my cameraman, this dude, you could clearly tell, he wants to be like the next guy, the guy doing Blade 4. This guy wants to be Hollywood, baby.
The next Denzel.
He wanted to be – this was his chance to get recognized.
Sure.
And it wasn't happening. For me, I've been there long enough to know that sometimes you get on camera, sometimes you don't. Hey, you know what? You get in – nice lunch, you cut a paycheck for more than you're probably worth, and you go back home. It's just a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
But this dude was like maybe he felt like he was promised something that didn't happen. But regardless, I was like, oh my God, this is freaking baller. They literally had to take green screen over it because
they literally had to do what?
Well, you have to understand that the ambulance literally falls. Like, some guy just takes a hard right turn into nothing.
Right.
And so, obviously, it goes over the bridge, and it bursts through You'll see this on the show. But the problem is that that obviously didn't happen in real life. Mm. Now, I actually did get to see them have an ambulance pulled up by a crane, let it fall, someone throwing like little fire starter kits into it.
That's
then
cool.
Beating the shit out of it. That alone was worth the trip. Just seeing seeing this thing get blown the fuck up in front of me.
Yeah, dude, I've got to say, I think it's just very, very cool that you're doing this kind of stuff and seeing that behind the scenes stuff. And yeah, you're getting paid to go and be it. I get it's time out of your schedule, but I mean, you're a huge Punisher fan. You run Punisher Body Count. So this is, I think it's just fucking cool. I mean, you know, I don't think it's going to lead to a movie career, but I just think it's cool. You know what I mean? Like I say all credit to you.
Well, there's like three kinds of extras that I've learned about. There's extras that want to get noticed. There's
sure.
People that just want to use the name. And for really most of those people, all it's that for them, it's to keep the resume fresh, hoping to get discovered in an actual audition.
Yeah. Are you looking for that? Like you know, all those people that are on like NCIS. Oh, sorry. You know, like NCIS SVU.
No.
Okay. That was my question. Yeah.
No, I'm in one of the categories, but this ain't it. I do not think I can become an actor. That I used to joke about extras being like, I think I even joked about it on when I was first on, like being stereotypes and being just these personas or whatever, but they have such a large amount of hustle and work ethic, and they go above and beyond what most jobs would ask of people. I've actually come around to respecting them.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
so even when people get like mad or a bit huffy about stuff, this is their life. And this is the dice they're rolling, where they hope that instead of getting paid the scale minimum, they might actually make a living off it someday.
Yeah, it's a gamble. It's a gamble, man. Then I mean, like, people are back in their place. I would find it a bit much if some guy thinks he's the next Laurence Olivier and all he's doing is that kind of stuff after a while. But then again, you know, you've got to fake it till you make it, kind of in that industry.
That is literally 90% of the people there, yeah, that just want to try and make it through any means possible. Sure. Now, then there's another group where it's just people that are basically – the best way of putting it is they've resigned themselves to it. That doesn't necessarily mean they've given up.
Sure.
What that just simply means is that, well, you know what? Both my kids have gone off to college. I'm an empty nester mom, and I have 10 hours to kill, so why don't I just do this? And so that's those people's lives, and they're okay with it. They literally do so many shows. What names of the shows are. There were tons of people when I was on Punisher Season 2 that didn't even know what this show was. They thought it was like an NCIS kind of show.
Sure.
Or is this Law and Order? Like that kind of stuff. And and then they go like, oh, who's that guy? And I recognized him as the detective. And I said, oh, yeah, that's a main character from the show. And he's like, is that the Punisher? I'm like, no, that's not the Punisher. Then there's the third category, which is – and they're kind of rare, but they definitely exist because I'm one of them. Mm-hmm. They're just people that are on the show because for them they're huge fans of the show.
Sure.
And it's an honor for them just to be on it. And I kind of realized that that's me. Like I thought maybe I could do something about this. Maybe I could make something with this and have – a minor acting career on the side. Hmm. No, you can't have a mining acting career on the side. You either do it or you don't, kids. That's a very important thing.
Yeah.
But there are people that can take 48 hours off from their job. That's me. And just be like, holy shit, I'm on Daredevil. Wow, I'm on The Punisher. And I get to nerd out with the other four guys that knows what this show is and talk about the current run or what we thought season one was like. And there are people like that.
Of course,
And then the people from the second group have no idea what you're talking about.
But that's fine. I mean, look, dude, I mean, I imagine to sustain a wage doing that, paying what they pay, like on scale, you need to do a lot of it. So for those people, it doesn't matter if it's Law & Order SVU or Criminal Intent or The Punisher. You know what I mean? They're just getting there, putting their time in, going to the next thing. But you're in a different category. You're coming from a very specific knowledge base, and you've managed to get a foot in the door, and it's extremely cool. So, you know, all these things are valid. I mean, the homeless guy, his is valid. He needs 120 as well. You know what I mean? He's literally on the street. So, God bless him for at least getting that. You know?
Yeah, No, and once again, just... I don't look down on any of those groups or anything like that.
No, I think it's cool.
Those are the people that you see.
Is there any more coming up for you? Jessica Jones. Is Jessica Jones going to have season three? Or?
Yeah, they absolutely will. And I'm almost certain it will be canceled 24 hours after it comes out.
People,
I was not on Jessica Jones season three. Okay. But I did know some people that were on it, and they said it was kind of a bummer to be on that show.
Really?
Because that show was still shooting when Daredevil.
Oh, when Daredevil got canceled.
You see the writing on the wall.
Yeah,
they were still looking for people to do shoots, even back in December, early December. They were still calling people in. Now, that's mostly for people walking along a sidewalk to make things look realistic.
Sure.
Actually, hilarious to me. Well, I'll see someone walking, and I'll see that person because that person's looking for their signal, whether they should hit go further to their mark. Your mark is where you need to stop walking.
Right.
And like so many times, I see people like that, and I feel so bad because that's clearly their first day.
Yeah.
And they don't know what they're doing. It's like an alien trying to fit in.
Yeah.
With human society, it's great.
That's cool that you pick up these little things. I think it's amazing. Well, Dane, thank you for taking us through basically your extra career in Punisher. I mean, I'm always fascinated. And who knows? You might think to yourself, well, you know what? I want the 120. I want a little bit more. You could do a bit more of this in the future. It is on your resume now that you've done these. There could be other shows. You know what I'm saying? Do you get
caught? I'm actually on another Netflix show called Mindhunter.
Excellent.
Because of it.
I know Mindhunter, the serial killer show, yeah?
Yeah, I'm actually with the FBI in that show. I dust for fingerprints in a couple of those episodes.
Excellent.
And I literally had to get a six-year-old man that used to work for the FBI to show me how to dust for fingerprints realistically. That show definitely goes the extra mile. Like, they actually go, here's how police officers and FBI agents would act both on the force and off the clock 24/7. Like, they have real consultants there.
Yeah.
And I literally had to pretend that was my job because the dude, a six-year-old man, would yell at me for dusting for fake fingerprints incorrectly. He'd say, no, dude, you're using too much of the wrist. Just twirl it with your fingers. I'm the little duster. And I'm like, okay, man, I'm sorry. Did the serial killer get away because of my actions?
Yeah, he did. And yes, he did, Dane. Isn't that whole show, I mean, I don't watch it, but I know of it, it's all about like the beginnings of the modern sort of way they detect serial killer patterns and stuff? Isn't it said like in the early 80s or something like that?
Yeah, it's hilarious how bad American law enforcement 1974. It is literally just people going like, well, if we don't get a confession, how else are we going to get the criminal? And serial killers, there was even a debate whether serial killers were even that real or that common. Maybe it's just a dude that just killed a lot of people because he was in a bad mood. Don't know.
Sadly, that debate's been settled, hasn't it? Sadly. I mean, they're all too common.
Yeah.
It's fucking nuts.
Absolutely.
Remember the Golden State Killer? Remember the Golden State Killer? They caught that guy, they pegged that guy recently on the DNA, and he'd been doing it since the 70s and 80s. It was quite recently, I think it was like last year they caught him. He's like 80 now, and they got him from one of those family DNA searches. Like, his cousin had taken the test, and it was almost a total match. And apparently that's how they narrowed it down to being him, and they just went and arrested him. He just came in without any... No, they sort of just turned up at his house and arrested him after they got a DNA sample of him from the rubbish or something.
Yeah, I think that was a guy that did a 23andMe DNA.
Yes, yeah.
And that's hilarious. Like, hey, just so you know, you are you have a 60% chance of a heart attack, and you have a relative that's a serial killer. Like, that's hilarious to me that they managed to find that.
I know.
I mean, my own family's done stuff like that as well, and you learn so much weird stuff with those tests.
You know? It's pretty interesting. Now, Dan, I thought we'd shift gears, and thank you for your time talking about the TV show. So basically, there were rumors that Slavers was going to be the basis of Punisher Season 2. You recall that rumor, Dane?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so many people were saying stuff like that, and I'm watching this TV show. Dude, I'm not seeing it.
No, I've watched 8 episodes.
I'm not seeing where the slavers are coming in.
Unless they go super dark with the girl's storyline, like take a sudden trip into the depths of hell dark, I don't think it's going to happen. You know, like, she seems to be more of a thieving ring than a sex trafficking ring, based on what I'm seeing.
I don't even know if Netflix has the proper structure to do. No, they absolutely would. Marvel Max... our stories are 6 issues in length. That was the one thing, is when those comics were coming out on Punisher fan message boards, people were like, wow, Marvel Max is so good, but man, they take forever to resolve and they're just all decompressed. Why is they all got to be 6 issues long?
Yeah.
Marvel, like, boy, if nothing else, this would translate so well to Netflix that it's kind of tragic that they're not comfortable using that kind of material.
They've definitely got the format where they could do it. Like, there's no question of that. Of course they've got the format.
Yeah.
But it seems to be more political, maybe, at Disney?
No, I think Marvel or Netflix or whoever's – or really the showrunners, I just have this feeling, and I have no proof. Mm. It's just a feeling I have, that they don't want to make the main ethnic group.
Oh, they don't want the bad guys to be an ethnic group.
They don't want it to be an entire – like, they just don't want to be like, man, Eastern Europeans, am I right? Such pieces of shit. But meanwhile, even in the Marvel Max comics, they go, no, these pieces of shit, these 3 people.
Yeah.
They're not trying to condemn an entire culture, even though Marvel Max doesn't pussyfoot around the idea that – women are treated badly in these countries because these countries have always been at war, and there's not a lot of room for civil rights in these kinds of environments. That's also what makes it so bleak, is it's kind of difficult to have that kind of conversation on a Netflix show based off, hey, remember those superhero movies? Here's them for a fraction of the budget, but still, it's going to make someone happy. Here you go. I just don't think that's in the cards for Netflix.
That's a real shame, because one thing I really did respect when I reread back through the 6 issues of The Slavers, and it's the first time that I've read it pretty much since it came out in single issues, is they do have a conversation that's difficult, and yet it's not all about just demonizing Albanians, but it is about showing these soldiers that came down from the hills, this family, just they were beyond the pale, evil as evil. Like, it actually made Frank say, I've hated these people more than I've hated anyone in a long time. Like, it actually got into Frank's radar of personal distaste, like, high up there.
Can I stop you there, David? Because that line actually got a lot – that sparked a lot of shit amongst Punisher fans.
Did it?
Because this storyline takes place after Up is Down, Black is White. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
With Nikki Cavella?
Yeah, it's shortly afterwards,
where
isn't it?
A literal gangster unearthed Frank's family from their graves and pissed on their graves.
Yeah.
But even I remember, and then Frank literally goes on a killing spree, killing hundreds of people within 3 days.
True.
Get to Nikki. It's some of the craziest, darkest shit that's ever been in a Punisher comic.
Then it was out there. It was out there.
Someone tells her about slavers being bad. Yeah, and no. Narratively, as a self-contained story, it works. But in the greater tapestry, I feel like Ennis kind of dug a little too deep in that well of sadness. Going, this is the most mad I've ever been.
I know.
Do you remember last Tuesday, Frank? Do you remember 6 months ago when your family was on Earth? You're like, hey, this woman, I believe her name was...
Vera or something like that?
Was
it? Was it Vera? The woman that he smashes against the window?
You're thinking of Vera. I'm thinking of the lady that was...
the prostitute that
kidnapped.
Okay. So the initial starting woman you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what her name was, but
my goodness. I made it a thing to remember all these people's names. Like, there's Russ, there's Marcy, there's Weston, there's Price, Anna. Her name's Anna, I believe. No, that's her daughter's name.
Her daughter's name is Anna, but I mean, regardless, we know who you're talking about, the initial girl who sparks it all off. I mean, I get what you're saying, but I guess you've got to remember, I'm coming back to this not having read much of Ennis since it came out. Like, I collected it in trades and I've got it all, you know, in omnibuses and stuff. and I've started a reread of Max recently, but coming back to Slavers, reading it like 10 years, 12 years later, I was impressed by it, more than I'm impressed by a lot of Ennis's Punisher. I think this was a particularly strong arc from him. I wanted to get your take. Now, my understanding, Dane, is, am I right in saying, is Ennis your guy when it comes to Punisher? Is he your number one kind of thing?
Well, that's kind of a tough thing simply because I think I've read material from Garth Ennis any other comic writer out there. I'm not more than anyone else. I'm just saying I've read more Garth Ennis stuff than any other writer. And there's a guy that I know that is a video game tester, and he tests racing games, and he can't – now, I'm not saying I'm on the same level as this guy, but he says he can't enjoy racing games to them, like car racing games, because he can see the Matrix code while doing it. Like, he knows all the tricks that people use, and it takes him out of it. The thing with Ennis is I've read so much of it, of his stuff, I can kind of see his normal bag of tricks that he uses to make compelling fiction.
Sure.
Like, and you also get all into all his themes and motifs. Like, for instance, whenever you deal with anything with World War One or World War Two, you can definitely tell that Ennis subscribes to the lions led by donkeys thought of military history. Do you know that phrase, lions led by donkeys?
No, I mean, I can understand what you're saying, like what the soldiers are being led by fools. Is that it?
Yeah, especially in World War One, where they thought the soldiers are brave, but it's the generals that were idiots and assholes.
Sure.
When, like, that was the most common belief. And it gets played by – it gets put up by shows like Blackadder and things like that.
Yeah.
Like, Garth Ennis, if you're above a sergeant in the military, you're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Like, how dare you go above
– it's a fairly common theme. It's a fairly common sort of thing in war fiction, you know.
Garth Ennis – also describes to the apex of comedy is a guy that's really fat or something that gets shoved up. It's just always hilarious. I've seen it so many times.
Yeah.
Or you thought you were banging a woman, but it was actually me, a dude. Like, this is stuff that he probably thought was hilarious in like there was probably some comedian or TV show when he was in middle school, and that just imprinted on him. Mm. This is the funniest shit in the world.
He almost believes, and
holy humor.
Yeah, as someone who's I've read a fair share, you know, I've read most of Preacher, all of his Max Run, like and other stuff, like quite a bit. For me, his gross out humor kind of technique is never been my favorite part of his oeuvre, you know, of his technique. Whereas his kind of more brutal take, I respond more to. Like, Slavers didn't have much of that gross-out humor in it, and I felt it was the better for it. I've been reading some of his earlier Max stuff in the Max Collection 1 that came out recently. I've almost finished it, and that had more of the gross-out stuff. I'm in a weird place with Garth Ennis. Like, I enjoy him. I think he's a very good writer. I've liked a lot of his stuff. Sometimes for me, the humor and the sort of like language doesn't land as well as I think he's hoping. I think he overuses it. I'm not coming from a position where I think swearing's bad. I just think he overuses it in general in his scripts. And based on what I've read, you know, he seems to do that almost all the time. Like, Preacher's full of it. This is definitely full of it. And at times I feel it's a bit of a crutch, you know. But that said, he still tells a compelling story.
I don't want to get too far into the woods with like these little things, but as a motif where if you believe in anything super strongly, you're a sucker.
Yeah.
For the most part. I mean, true. He is a bit sentimental. He does believe in true love and that it can conquer a lot of things.
Sure.
He also believes that a group of hardened motherfuckers will always be better than superheroes for the most part.
Oh, he's got that. You just have to take that, don't you, that like he has an anti-superhero thing. That's fine. I mean, for Punisher Max, it doesn't even matter, you know.
That's the other thing. I don't think he hates superheroes. He hates how badly they've dominated the market.
Sure.
And it really bothers him because everyone goes like, oh, he hates superheroes except Superman. I don't think he really does. I just think that, and he's mentioned this in interviews, he just hates how much they've stifled the market where people go like, well, I'd really like to do this compelling story, Rocky family escaping and building a new life. And then the publishers go, well, yeah, but Marvel's releasing 5 new Spider-Man issues, Spider-Man comics this month, so I don't think there's going to be room on the comic rack. That's what annoys Garth Ennis.
And he's got a point. He's got a serious point. He's got a huge point with that as well. Can I just say, I mean, I agree with him there. Like, sadly, the market hit a point where everyone's tastes are supposed to be between 13 to 17 or 12 to 17. And I myself think it's a shame because I think there's only so much you can do with superheroes, and I think that's shown by just how poor some of the modern superhero comics are and how repetitive and how watered down and how long they are to get anywhere. And I often sometimes think, my God, like, it's a shame that Marvel and DC won this war just with capes, you know?
Sure. And that goes back to a lot of censorship issues going back in America. We kind of shot ourselves in the foot with that. But the main thing that makes me like the Slavers so much is that the common Ennis crutches aren't really there. Like, when Ennis really sets down to make a good story where you feel bad for the people you're supposed to feel bad for, and the true evil in his characters isn't that they do fucked up things.
Sure.
It's how little they care about it, how it's really just business for them. Like, even in that series, The Boys, the ultimate villain wasn't that Superman proxy or the other Superman proxy or any superhero. It was literally a corporation that was controlling them for money.
Sure.
And were only acting in the benefit of their bottom line. And it didn't go beyond that. They had no secret plans to take over the world. Everything was being manipulated. Corporation. I know that sounds kind of edgy or whatever. One of the things I enjoyed about The Boys is that there were certainly victims there, but the true villain wasn't just a crazy Superman guy, or it wasn't the stupid X-Men parodies. It was just a corporation that owned them and was manipulating things from behind the scenes. And that's where Ennis really shines, is where true villainy or true evil in this world isn't flashy. It isn't showy.
Yeah.
It cares as much about the human being as cancer itself.
Yeah.
That's what makes the Slavers so powerful to me, is that these people, it literally is nothing personal, girls. It's just, we need the money.
Rape them till you break them. That was it, wasn't it? Remember, rape them till you break them. That was the quote, which I found so chilling. And yet he hit the nail on the head with that one comment. I thought it was actually very powerful writing at times, and I actually felt wrapped up really well. And I feel a lot of times, like a lot of storylines by a lot of writers, don't wrap them up very well. I thought Slavers had a great wrap up, great final two issues, you know?
Yes, I thought it, for the last two issues, especially with Veru, Veru.
Yeah, where he's slamming her against the wall.
To break them.
Yeah, he's slamming her against that window, and Frank's showing her the same level of mercy she showed the girls. Like, he's like, it's nothing. It's nothing to me. I have control. I'll do what I like. Isn't that the whole key to your whole sort of success and mantra? Now he's like, it's obvious when we're talking about it, but it was just done so well in the comic. I also want to pay gigantic credit to the artistic team on this Slavers issue, because I thought the art was fantastic. Really powerful.
Yeah, Leandro Fernandez.
Yeah, well, thank you. I was just opening up my iPad, but you've saved me the job. I mean, I would give this story, I would give it, as a Punisher fan, a Garth Ennis fan, I'd give this a 10 out of 10. I think it's, I mean, my favorite Garth Ennis is probably either this or probably Preacher. But I think this is probably as good as it gets when it comes to Punisher. This is kind of what I wish Marvel would do more of, whether that's by getting writers of the caliber of a Rucker back or a new writer. But as hard-hitting as this, because I think this said something about the human condition, frankly, in a comic book, which rarely gets done, you know, in any real way. Like, I was like, there are girls on the streets. This is actually happening. These crimes are being committed. This is fictional, but it's also real. And like when the woman was giving the lecture and then she was explaining how the social worker, how she gave the lecture to the people trying to explain, like, if you don't understand yet by looking at these photos, think of your sisters, you know, your daughters, you know, your wives, all these people. They could be these people being subjected to this. And then she's like, later on, she's like to Marcy, she's saying, I censored it actually and didn't tell them about some of the stuff because I wanted to keep their sympathy. And she and the detail, it was fine little touches like that on top of what was already a pretty kick-ass Punisher storyline that I thought elevated this to true greatness, basically.
Reading this story made me realize what makes the Punisher Max line so popular with people and what makes it so great. But I think what makes Punisher Max stand out, Garth Ennis switched gears from his Marvel Knights run. I mean, those are great stories, more humor in them, Black Gallows humor and such.
Mm.
But the difference between Marvel Knights and Marvel Max is that Marvel Knights, here's a gang. Oh, okay, go kill the gang. Assume they are assholes.
Mm.
In Marvel Max, oh, no, here is an actual organization. Here is the literal consequences of this organization. And by the way, Spider-Man is not here.
Yeah.
This is the real world.
Yeah.
That's the framework that Marvel, that Punisher Max is working under. The craziest it got was Nick Fury showed up sometimes. Then it's not coming down on a freaking jetpack
or no.
anything like that. That's as far as it got. So the thing is that this became the inescapable consequences of the madness of the world. And that's what makes the Punisher Max series work so well. Mm. Is that, yes, the violence and some of the characters in it get a little batty sometimes. I mean, Kirkuda goes either between that's the coolest guy ever to even looking at. This is insane, especially the Barracuda miniseries.
Yeah.
But Slavers is just these people. They're not trying to take over the world or anything like that.
No.
They are this just became the next best business step. Because genocide doesn't make the money you think it does.
Yeah. Well, the guy said you got the soul of a banker to his son. You know, and that's the sad truth. That, like, they're taking kind of the capitalistic mantra and applying it to the slave trade. You know, the sex trafficking trade. And sadly, guess what? That's what's actually happening in the world, like, now, you know, and has been happening for God knows how long, probably for decades. And
yeah,
I don't know. I just found it powerful. There are times I've said to you offline, there are times I read a, like, I'll be honest, there are times I read a Punisher comic and I say, I turn around to my girlfriend and I said, it's almost time to take it to the streets. And she's like, okay, time to get back on your meds. But like, you read something like this and it actually impacts you in a real way. And you're like, fuck, this is actually a commentary and on what's actually going on. And it actually works. And, you know, there was one moment that I thought was kind of stupid. I know Ennis, like, paints, you know, he knows a lot about military stuff. Like, you know, he's really into it. When Frank starts firing on them from the wharf and then just jumps off the wharf into the, I guess, lake or whatever it was, and then they just sort of, they all fire down at him, and the next scene is just Frank in a car driving away. Do you recall that scene?
I didn't really know what the escape plan there. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it was a, it's, you know, did he have like an underwater hovercraft or something? I don't understand. But he was also just firing from a real open position. And I know Guinness is the tactical master. I'm no tactical master of war, but I'm like, this seems like he's not got a lot of cover or anything.
They did shoot up that poor guy on the dock. In Garth Ennis's worldview, as long as you have a body to throw in front of you, bullets cannot harm you.
Okay.
Because that was another big thing. Even in Irish, as long as one of the gang lords had a guy they could grab by the scruff of their neck and put in front of them, no bullet can get through that mook. That's their scroll of invincibility. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned Frank jumping off the dock, and then it's like, oh God, he's slowly getting away. That's a very common theme for Frank in a lot of comics, where he just jumps off a bridge and superheroes just can't get to him. It's the funniest thing. Jake and I crack jokes about it all the time. But also, he just has amazing disappearing acts in the Slavers at all. It's probably my big biggest complaint, because after he beats, not even beats the shit, just clowns on those two cops, Marcy and Russ.
Yeah.
He just walks away. He gets away. Meanwhile, I'm pretty sure that was like an all points bulletin to go. There's shots fired. Is it just these two cops? Were other cops not coming? Frank just got away. And then there was another one where another cop. Man, the cops are just such shit.
Oh, they're hopeless. They're absolutely useless.
I mean, because literally one guy finds Frank when it looks like he's going to execute two Johns who were looking for some sex slave action that night, and he's doing it nearby a bridge and some train tracks. And the cop chases him. He just sees him by mistake,
yeah.
Or by chance, I should say.
Yeah.
He pulls out his gun, says, "Don't run." Frank jumps over a fence, or jump this fence instead of shoot at him or whatever. And he jumps the fence, fucks up, rolls down the hill, and bangs his forehead on the train tracks.
Yeah.
And he's bleeding profusely. And Frank, for a sustained beating, unless I didn't hit those two cops and your organization's full of shit, then he just runs off into a tunnel. And
yeah.
They're like, fuck, he's gone, man. He's gone.
Where's
that tunnel go, dude?
Yeah, I know. I've got a question. Did he kill those two guys that were coming from the sex club? Or he didn't get the chance to because that cop came? Like,
that's a good question.
Yeah.
It would have been an interesting scenario. He did not get the chance to kill them. Plus, what he was going to do was basically scare them, saying, remember, he said, pretend you lost your wallet. You need to go back in. Because Frank, one of the things I found interesting about this story was just how impenetrable the story was. Compare that to in the beginning, the first issue. A 100-year-old Italian man is having a birthday. Frank just literally walks in through the back door with an M60 and just lets loose.
Yeah. Well, he was worried about the prostitutes. He was worried about the girls. That's why he didn't want to go in, guns blazing. He says that a couple of times.
Yeah, makes it impenetrable. It's something that Americans are aware of, that we can't, or Albanians. Or that actually, this was a group comprised of multiple nationalities. But anyway, the Vera Cristu Tiburu, I'm not quite sure how you say his name, but they all know that the Punisher isn't going to go kill innocents. Even the police are aware of that.
Mm.
So Frank has to continually think outside the box, and it doesn't work all the time, like with those two Johns. He didn't kill them.
No.
I don't think he would have killed those two guys, simply because they partook in it, but they weren't fully aware that they were sect slaves. I mean, they had an idea of it.
Yeah.
But I don't think, like, the guys like Paula, the guy in the club, I don't think he advertises it as, hey, get your dick sucked by a slave. Mm. I don't think they sell it like.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think they think it's just a brothel. Like that one guy's bitching, saying how, like, they advertised it so much, but it was like the world's worst fuck or whatever. Yeah, that's interesting. And I guess Frank's always got an interesting attitude, depending on the writer, on what he does to sort of the people when he gets the information out of them, who are guilty of something. Sometimes he just kills them. But generally they have to be pretty bad. Remember, there's always one comic, and I don't know who wrote it, but it was probably Chuck Dixon or Mike Baron, because it's back in the 90s, and there's like a chemical warfare thing this agent, this guy's devising, and Frank tracks him down, and he kills everyone else, and then the guys like starts to brag about the chemical warfare, and Frank just turns around and it's like, yeah, he's going to kill him now. And the guy's like, oh, did I say the wrong thing? Because he thinks Frank wants him to create, like, the nerve agent or whatever it was that he was. You know, I always find it interesting. There's always that point where like, the perp, you know, the guilty party, they've expended their usefulness to Frank. Like, he's got whatever he needed from them. And it's like, what do I do with them now? And back in the day, he used to kill a fair number of them. But as you're saying, just these two people who went to the sex club, yeah, I guess for them it's, you know, if Ennis had made it clear they were underage, Frank would probably kill them, I imagine. You know, that seems to be the kind of, like, he needs that red flag, generally.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Also, I think we're returning customers. Mm. I feel like that would also set off Frank.
Yeah, no, it's just interesting. Like, I mean, turning from this for a second, something that you guys on Punisher Body Count, I know, like, Carl Blackstone, a regular correspondent, he does a bit of fan fiction. There are moments, because I'm a writer, I've written three books, there are moments where I think, man, I'd love to write some Punisher. and do fan fiction. But for me, it's just a question of, like, when I'm spending my time writing, I want to be working on original content. But do you ever get that impulse, Dane? I know you're a writer. You're an English teacher, aren't you? Do you ever think, man, I want to sit down? Because I must admit, some of these Punisher stories, I have that Chuck Dixon thing where I'm like, I look at the news sometimes and I think, man, I could write some sweet stories, you know, from these kind of, like, news stories that I'm reading.
I'll answer that in two parts. The first part is, I am always gun shy of super fans wanting to write a character regularly.
Mm.
Now, with that, like I actually get a little bit scared when someone says, oh, I'm the biggest fan of this character and I'm so glad to have control of it for the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Like, that's how you get Dan Slott's Spider-Man run.
Yeah, agreed.
Dennis, by the way, was not the biggest Punisher fan in the world when he got the job. He wrote Judge Dredd. He understood what the Punisher was about and respected it, but he didn't feel compelled to reference stuff from the Baron run or Dixon's run or any of the people that came before. He didn't feel compelled to make some kind of reference to Spider-Man, his first appearance in Spider-Man. He just made stories that he thought were compelling and good.
Sure.
Now, with that said, I do like it when really big fans of material write things like miniseries or one shot. I actually have two ideas for a story. I actually like one idea where it's a one shot where some gangsters, now this is like in the multiverse, some low level mutants grab a hold of Frank. One of them paid a psychic mutant to get in Frank's head. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing that? It's like, because this steals money from the mob all the time. He has tons of money. Let's just steal his money from the warehouse and sell him off. Like, really opportunistic, business-minded guy.
Mm.
They go inside Frank, and it's like riding down the River Styx, because all of Frank's memories that are just people that killed.
Yeah.
And the missions that he's gone, it's just a hellish celebration of the history of the Punisher. Like, literally, in my view, the guy that's in charge of the boat is Barracuda or whatever, but you never say who he is or something. Like,
yeah.
I would love just that simple, like, it's a bit masturbatory, but I would really love that kind of story celebrating all the psychos that have been in the Punisher series. I also, if I had the chance...
What did you say then? Dane, you cut out. What were you saying? What was your second story?
Oh, sure. I would love Frank to go after the Triads.
After the Triads. Universe. Yeah, that would be awesome.
And him to go after and I'd like him to go after the Triads for the same reason he's going after this group, because of human slavery. Because the Triads are getting really big into that.
Okay.
Anytime there's a typhoon, like they mention, Jen, the social worker, she mentions that, saying human slaverings literally try and beat out the Red Cross whenever there's a major typhoon or hurricane to try and scoop up all the women, any little girls, and either in their organization or sell them off at auction. And the Triads are at the front lines of that. They also do a lot of other, but the main thing about them is that they're broken up almost into, like, terror. So even if you destroy the head of that organization, there's still 100. They're not structured like the classic Italian mafias. Where
they're kind of siloed. Is that what you're saying?
Branches up into. They're siloed off. And even if you destroy one operation, recreate later on. And they're very family-oriented. Mm. By family, I mean that they're loyal to each other by blood packs and stuff. And I would think that would be a very interesting group of people to go after Frank, because where would that end? Like, the Nucci family ends when you kill Ma Nucci.
Yeah.
This organization ends when you kill Tiberiu, Christu, and Vera. Mm. That's made very clear. Mm. So human slavery isn't over, but in this instance, it is. I just would like that idea of literally Frank fighting a tidal wave. I think there's a lot of... I feel that would be very compelling fiction.
Yeah, and taking your point, as a teenager, when I read Punisher, I used to be obsessed by the Triads. Like, I used to research them in the library and stuff all the time, just basically thinking about storylines that they could be in. The sad thing, which I think we've touched on, is I think, based on what I'm seeing, Marvel have little stomach for that kind of storyline, and yet there's a market. And I just wonder if it's worth like, they certainly have Max doing well in reprints. Maybe, and I think Ennis probably has had his say on the Punisher, maybe it's worth getting another writer in there with the same sort of brief and rules that Ennis had and giving their take, you know, and sort of starting again with it. Like, you don't need to make Frank... I always thought with Ennis, Frank faced the problem that, you know, he was aged sort of in real time. You could still keep Frank fairly young and do the same storylines just in a Max construct. I firmly believe that placing him in the Marvel Universe is okay, but I think take Frank out of it like he is in this storyline and you start to get some really compelling stories that don't need a Spider-Man or a Doctor Doom or, you know, Iron Man armor or whatever it is. I fully agree with you that there's some fascinating stories to be told. And, like, if I'm pitching to Marvel, that's the kind of stuff I'm pitching. I probably wouldn't need to go as bleak as Ennis either. I don't think you quite need to go as violent. You know, I would almost say you don't even need to use the language. If that's if the bad language was the stumbling block with Marvel, I'd be prepared to concede it, you know?
Yeah, it's things that, oh, you can't do Punisher anymore because Punisher Max exists, and they hit the limit with that. Punisher existed without people calling each other cunt for decades.
Yeah,
the Punisher
exactly.
Without a fence going through a man's torso since the 70s. It's fine. The Punisher doesn't live and die on whether you can see someone's exposed colon or not. Yeah. It really doesn't matter in the larger scheme of things. The Punisher is about a primal retribution. Not letting the evil that walks calmly among us walk away. Mm. And that's what The Slavers is about, is that these people, literally, they make it very clear that this is going to continue. It's someone's going to fill this gap eventually. There's a strong tinge of to that kind of thing. Like, why even bother? But then again, like you said, I'm a teacher. Mm. Some of my students, just by looking at them in their past.
Yeah.
That they won't succeed, but you got to at least give them the chance. You got to at least try. And then they move on, and you have no control over what they do with the information you give them. Maybe they don't use it at all. But then, you know what? A new group comes in.
Yeah.
And life goes on.
And let's face it, like, you're so right. You've got to help those people or teach those people that are sitting in front of you. Frank, okay, inside this storyline, has saved those women. Okay, he hasn't solved the problem once and for all, but those individuals are, quote-unquote, at least removed from that situation and given a chance. And he even says, one went back to hooking, one disappeared, one's dead. Two or three of them are doing okay, and the original lady, she has good days and her bad days, but at least she's having some good days. Like, when people do, like, the whole, the world is bleak, what's the point? I'm sort of like, you're missing the point there. I always believe. Like maybe I've just got a bit of a positive soul, but there's a part of me that thinks, yeah, okay, sure, the world's bleak. Yeah, shit's popping off all over the place. Go to Syria, you know. But it's also like, if you're so fucking worried, go down to a soup kitchen and start helping out. Like, you know, really, if it's troubling you that much, you know, go down to a women's shelter, donate some money, like, do some small actions. Just because, you know, people are by nature selfish doesn't mean you should 100% give up on everything. I mean, otherwise, there would be no point, and we'd be living in, like, The Walking Dead, basically, you know?
Yeah, and to bring this back to The Punisher, one of my least favorite critiques on The Punisher, whether it's done outside or done by characters inside the comic, is, oh, man, you know, The Punisher kills all these people, and it never amounts to anything. Crime's still here, Frank. I think they even did that. I think that's a argument Microchip made.
Sure.
In the beginning. It's like, crime's still around, Frank. How about you go hunt Osama bin Laden? That will matter. Like, and Daredevil's made that argument, and then people who think they know Punisher comics make that argument, and it's very silly. Hmm. There's also a guy that is never going to kill people for money.
Yeah.
Because he's dead.
Yeah, exactly.
So many in the world here, but he'll at least cauterize it and stop the bleeding, just like what you said with the aftermath of those women. And even that got out okay. I doubt they're gonna have many pleasant nights.
Yeah,
you know what, no more are being shipped out. In fact, E.T. Baru alive at the end at least gave them pause for thought, like, man, maybe we should wait a while before bringing this up.
Yeah, exactly.
And at least buying some women an extra year of peace before they get kidnapped.
I think it's very clever.
That's what I really appreciate about the story.
Yeah, I think it was a very clever way to finish the story. And I'll go further. If I'm walking down the street today and two guys jump me in the alley and beat the shit out of me and, you know, almost kill me, but if while they're doing that, there's, you know, and let's say I lose the battle and say some vigilante character stops them or a cop stops them, okay, well, there's a reason. Like, it's good that they've stopped them because, like, it hasn't solved the problem of people, you know, mugging people in alleys, but it's solved one problem. Like, that is the nature of law enforcement and, you know, vigilante is like the flip mirror, evil mirror side of it. Like, there is a reason that there are checks and balances in the system. You know, it's not, the goal isn't to, for cops to wipe out crime 100%. Like, that will never happen.
Yeah, I'm just, it's just a comment. I like what you're saying, Dane, because I think people who, if people like, well, there's no need for the Punisher because, like, he can never solve everything. It's like, yeah, neither can any character, like, really. Like, the most boring story in the world is a story where they eliminate crime forever. Like, that's another story. Like, it's not realistic. Yeah. Like, part of the Punisher's appeal is he exists in sort of a simulation of the real world and, you know, it plays into people's, you know, fears and stuff. Like, I at times wonder, because we're so filtered through the media, you know, with crime waves and everything. Like, I wonder, are we on top of the crime? Are we not on top of the crime? Like, who knows what's being reported? You know, really. Like, but then you dig a bit deeper, and we're not on top of the crime. There's huge drug rings operating. There's all sorts of shit beneath the surface, really, if we really want to dig into it, beyond what the media sells us, you know, in like a 20-second package.
Sure. And what I appreciate about Garth Ennis is that he, as dark as this story is, he steps away from the edgy answer that Frank is the ultimate solution, and he says, actually no, Jen, the social worker, is the ultimate solution. She's the one that, like, Frank takes away the cancer and she's the one that that replenishes the body. She is the one that actually tries to make sure the cancer doesn't come back or eliminate the causes of the cancer. That's what I really do appreciate the story. The problem is that what Jen doesn't do isn't sexy or exciting.
Sure.
It there's nothing visceral to it. It's doing a bunch of presentations in front of journalists and academics and hoping someone gives a shit.
Yeah.
And it's boring.
Yeah.
I know, because I've done studies to improve things, and it's, but that is how real progress gets made in life. And the fact that Garth Ennis took the time to show that makes like an adult story for me. Like, that's the other thing. Marvel Max isn't adult just because people swear.
No.
Or someone's viscera or whatever. It's adult because it's into real-life consequences in real-life connection have in reality itself. Like, even the police, even Russ and Marcy, they're being put up as the good cops.
Yeah.
They make it very clear that they have their own...
They have their own agenda.
Own shithead traits as well.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because Marcy sometimes looks like she has feet of clay because she'll laugh at gay jokes or black jokes when her partners are not around. And who is black and gay? Russ, obviously. But then you see Russ, the cops that want to clean up their department. But what it's really looking after is Russ wants promoted out of all this.
Yeah.
By exposing corruption, he will be the one that gets to be bullied. Yeah. And even Marcy is a little bit indignant over that idea. I mean, clearly Russ deserves it on some level. He deserves a promotion from all the shit he's been given. But it's not done with the most angelic of intentions.
No. I think we have to pay some... Ennis is right, everyone has got a touch of dirt in them, which is true. Like, really. Like, no one's an angel. Like, everyone's got their own agenda at some level. He's just, you know, I thought he painted that relationship relatively well. I also like that when this social worker had taken the people, the women, and was placing them, she was even having trouble with the woman who was placing them. She was saying, that's not a solution forever. Like, it was all about, like, none of this is the forever solution. This is a work in progress.
In most comics, it's pretty cut and dry. Here, like what you just said, everyone has a little bit of dirt on them.
Yeah.
And everyone has their own agendas that are not necessarily always friendly to yours. Or even matches up with your ideology. But it's the decision you make the decision you make of who you lie down with. Because one of the major points of this whole series is that she gives Frank information that's going to kill a lot of people, and it's going to cause a lot of chaos.
Yeah.
And it goes against every civilized belief that she has.
Mm.
Similar to the police, those Marcy and Russ, they eventually decide, well, we'll help you out with this simply because we know we've been screwed with, and we're going to look the other way.
Yeah.
But they are giving up the ideas of law and order.
Yeah. Yeah. So everyone makes a compromise.
The other way. But police. Yeah. Like, police don't go to a diner and have a chat with a mass murderer. And that's what Marcy and Russ did. And Russ looked like he took it a bit lightly or whatever.
Look, it's. I think wrapping.
That's real life. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I think wrapping this up, we need to acknowledge, I think, that this is a genuinely great run by Ennis. I so many times like to remind people that Ennis wasn't the first writer of Punisher, because he's the first port of call for many, which I understand, and he's in my top three firmly. But I do want to pay tribute to an exceptionally good story arc that is amongst the very best story arcs that I've read of Punisher comics, and I've read plenty of them, as I'm sure you have, Dane. Slavers, I'm glad we've done it. I'm glad we're discussing it. I'm going to talk about it more with Stu on the regular Signal of Doom show, but having Dane Lamont here from Punisher Body Count giving his views on what I call a Council of Doom has been an absolute honor and a privilege, Dane.
Punisher, all you do here? for you, David. Oh, you got it?
Is it Punisher 100% of the time for you guys? Really?
Are you... Yeah. God damn it.
It's just, why? We love Mike.
And one of you's married.
Yeah. There was puzzlement and there was weariness. Yeah. There was puzzlement in him. There was weariness. And there was just, like, the sort of resignation. You know, all things. We love Mike Barron so much on this show. We've had him on twice. I chat with him regularly. He's a lovely guy. And I do know that that's the kind of thing that comes from the man's soul, you know? Like, when I ask him a question about Punisher, I always, like, softball it in. You know, hey, Mike, while we're talking about this, can I just ask you a quick question? And you can almost hear him go, yeah, shoot.
Yeah, that's his William Shatner moment when you ask, well, come on, man. No, it's funny you bring up Mike Barron, because the thing that sticks out to me is Jake and I have a habit of just really making a weird left turn in almost any interview that we do on the show.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite was when Tom Jane came on. He was one of our first guests, and he was the Punisher from the early 2000s Punisher movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was, I did a lot of research on Tom Jane, mm-hmm. and I knew he owned a Lynx, which is like a big cat.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it'd be really cool for me to ask about his Lynx. So when he first came on the show, he said, wow, it's really great to be with you guys. I really appreciate your passion. And I was told you were a good group of fellas. And I said, that's great, Tom. How's your cat? And he was like, oh, the cat's doing great. Hey, how do you know about my cat?
Like, yes. Yeah. I'm in your house now, Tom. I'm in your house. I'm looking at you.
Upset. No, like, Chip, I think, saved me on that one. It's like, oh, yeah, Dane is your garbage man. He goes through your shit, just so you know. And we all had a good laugh about that. But I was like, oh, that's a little, that was a bit odd. That would be like someone commenting on, like, so you're doing laundry right now, Dane? And it's like,
yeah.
I do laundry in the basement. How do you know that? How do you know I'm doing that? Yeah,
so about that cereal you eat, Dane.
Yeah, man, yeah.
That's good. It's all good, man.
That's why I like doing
Well, it's an honor to have you on, Dane. You should feel more free to come on more often when you'd like to, because I don't know if you know this, Stu, my co-host, has an aversion to all things Punisher, but I have to fight for it on the show, and, like, this week we're doing it because of the TV show. But it's just such a relaxing thing to be able to talk about Punisher without having to fight for his very right as a character. You know what I'm saying? Like, I normally have to, like, go into monologues, you know, sort of, like, defending him while also getting him across the line. It's nice to have a more relaxed conversation that, you know, the fate of the character doesn't seem to hinge on.
Yeah, it's very similar. You see, when ever Jake doesn't like anything, it's not even a discussion. It's like, nah, shit on the stick. They didn't follow the comics to the movie, so the movie's bad. It's like, no, movies are a different medium. Yeah. Oh, my God. You screeching ninny. What is wrong with you? But you know what? That's just what makes podcasting so...
That's it, man. You've got to have basically, you can't have two clones of yourself for too long. Our listeners start to fall asleep. You need to have that spire.
I have fantasized about that. No, I literally thought, like, if I cloned myself, would that be a compelling podcast? In my most psycho, holy shit, two or three of me, that would be a great show. Because I know how to work off my jokes and tag them properly. I do it half the time on my own show anyway. Oh my God, I would love that. I'm hanging around on this bitch of an earth just long enough for cloning to happen and for me to create the most banger podcast in the world. Just me and two of my clones, no homo, just having a great time on a podcast.
Can I ask, how long is your longest show? Like, body count? What's your finished, edited, put on the internet? What's your longest recording? Because I've got one that might impress you, but what's your longest?
Well over 3.5 hours.
Okay.
Plus there was one where, like, we were... recorded some material thing, so that's, you know, that one stretches the definition of a podcast. But yeah, go ahead.
Well, when I came back from Hawaii, Stu and I did 4 hours and 13 minutes one time, which is just ridiculous.
Wow, were you doing a charity?
No, it's just I just came back with a lot to say, and by the end Stu was just like that fighter on the ropes that I was just wailing on. He just given up all. And he said, Dave, the sad thing was you were getting more energy at the back end. I was picking up speed as well. I'd been away for about 3 weeks, so there'd been no podcasting, and I just came back with a lot to say. Much of it probably could have been, you know, cut out or censored, but we're now trimming it down to roughly about 2 hours a show, just in for terms of sanity, because our normal was around 3 hours, but we've got it down to about 2 hours a show now.
That's a good time. Podcasting is like... working out. You avoid it. You're not, it's going, eh, I don't want to do it. As soon as you say word one, you're like, yeah, let's get those pumps in. I'm ready. Yeah. Let's fucking do this.
Yeah, totally.
And then,
man,
like,
totally.
3 hours pass.
Exactly. Well, Dane, do you want to just give listeners places to find you? Obviously, Punisher Body Count is on iTunes. You've got a Facebook page as well, don't you?
Yeah, and we can be found on Google Play and on Spotify. Mm-hmm. So I know a lot of people want to listen to podcasts on Spotify. I think this is the point where I'm old, because I don't see the point of that, but that's the new hotness, listening to your favorite, to the Nerdist on Spotify. God bless you people.
Yeah, I agree. Like, what's wrong with fucking iTunes? Yeah, I'm like, what's wrong with iTunes? Did that become non-trendy? Suddenly we have to be on Spotify. We're about to go on Spotify as well, actually. Are you guys doing a Patreon yet, or what have you got?
Here's what we do, and this is what I've actually recommended for my cousin, who runs a podcast called the Wednesday Night Whiskey Committee, which is local Pennsylvanians talking about whiskey and local events. I like it because it's like a local show.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've noticed about podcasts, it's always got to be something pop culture or something dealing with the general zeitgeist, political thing or whatever, or general comedy. Listening to podcasts, like, I go, well, they're Australian. That's different from America. Yeah. That's interesting to me. That's what I like about my cousin's podcast, the Wednesday Night Whiskey Committee, which I've been on twice.
Cool.
I helped them make it. It's a little bit biased, but that show, like, that's Central PA, Appalachian. They'll make that very clear. Like, they'll tell you what a sheet's wrong is and stuff that makes no outside of the area, but they'll make it work.
Cool.
But, got a tangent there. But, yeah, on... What were you saying about iTunes? And
I was wondering if you guys had a Patreon yet. Like,
yes, the Patreon thing. Anyway, this is something I helped my cousin with. We don't do a Patreon. It's a coffee page. ko-fi.com. The coffee page essentially is you guys are able to tip the price of a cup of coffee, which is typically $1 or $2. What makes it different from a Patreon is that it doesn't renew every month. Mm-hmm. Like, if you give us $5 today, we're not going to take $5 from you next month, unless you want to. Like, if you want to set up a recurring payment.
Oh, so it's just like a monthly tip. I can just go in there and give you $5, $10, and we're done until I come back in and give you another $5 or $10 sort of thing.
Yeah, there was gave us a hefty Christmas present back in December, and we're very thankful for that person.
Cool.
I won't bring up their name here, sure, but they wanted some privacy. But most, okay, if you donate, we have like a whole page where we read your name. And sometimes on the coffee page, people recommend comics for us. And obviously, people who pay us, their suggestions get taken to the front of the line.
Sure. Okay.
It's just it's less responsibility for me because Jake and I have done things where we've raised money in the past. Sometimes for ourselves, something like when Jake's computer.
Yep. Yep.
Or we've done it for charity. My whole thing is that our show lives and dies on, is there a Punisher comic out? So I don't want to do anything on a basis like a Patreon
because
I create content for a month. I can't always exist.
You know, I understand. I mean, look, you guys have – I'll say it now. In case Signal listeners haven't checked Punisher Body Count out, Dane and Jake do a absolutely fantastic job. And I think casual Punisher fans could become – more hardcore, and the hardcore fans will absolutely eat it up. One thing I love that you guys do as well is the flashbacks. You've led me to go back and check out some old comics with the flashbacks. I think that's a really cool concept and cool segment. You guys are fantastic, and you definitely deserve, to give you that tip. It is funny. I don't know if you've seen Curb Your Enthusiasm, the anonymous donor. Have you ever seen that episode, like to the museum? And he donates to the museum, and he gets up as anonymous. And then Larry's pissed off because he's like, anonymous. It's Danson. I know it. And he knows it's Ted Danson. Danson's going around telling everyone he's anonymous. Because I'm just some prick. Because he's put his name under his. It's so funny. So, yeah. So you've got the anonymous donor on your show. Fantastic. And you should bill him as that. Yeah. You should thank you, our anonymous donor. So much better than the name donors.
Yeah.
All right, Dan. Well, I think I've taken.
And once again, on coffee, you can be yep. sorry, you can be named. Don't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, look, we're all joking. We're all in fun.
I've had a great time here, Dave.
Thank you so much, Dane, and thank you for taking the time. We will chat to you at a later occasion. Shout out to Dane and Jake at Punisher Body Count. Thank you.